This week on Making Contact.
I was a refugee in the camp for 17 years. Now I'm in California.
Wherever we go in any corner of the world, we have to struggle to live our life anywhere.
Facing a world map, most Americans would not be able to point to the Himalayan country of Bhutan. But thousands of Nepali-speaking refugees from this Buddhist-majority nation are arriving on North American soil and soon will be part of the rich cultural fabric of U.S. society. On this edition, correspondent Adelaide Chen brings us sounds from the journey of these new arrivals, from saying goodbye to the refugee camps to settling into Oakland, California. Their story of starting a new life is full of hard times, especially in this economy. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. Bhutan. It's a small country that's isolated from the rest of the world, nestled between India, Tibet, and Nepal. The country has rich cultural traditions, but also a tumultuous political history. In the late 1970s and 80s, the Bhutanese government initiated measures to strip away citizenship and expel nearly one-sixth of their population, the Lhotshampas. These ethnic Nepalis had migrated to Bhutan over generations and were deemed a cultural threat. They speak Nepali and are largely Hindu. Bhutan's state religion is Buddhism and is politically and culturally dominated by other ethnic groups. Ananta Gurung is director of the Bhutanese American Community Center in California. He remembers the political conditions in the early 1990s before he fled to Nepal and eventually the United States seeking political asylum.
The government wants Nepali-speaking people to follow Buddhist culture, like their culture, and wear their dress. And there were no freedom for, you know, the Nepali-speaking people. Our mother tongue was Nepali. We were not allowed to speak. And when that happened, like, you know, people went against the government saying that, you know, like, we should be able to respect our culture. We should be able to, you know, speak our language. We should be able to wear whatever we want to wear. And government didn't like that.
Thousands of Bhutanese of Nepali ancestry fled to refugee camps on the Nepal-Bhutan border. The displaced population has grown to more than 100,000 in the crowded camps. They are landless and without citizenship.
Yeah, it's a, you know, like, very sad thing for us, for our people, because we were born in Bhutan. We should be staying in Bhutan, you know, and feel proud of our country. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And it was very unfortunate that we landed in Nepal, because there we didn't have any status. Like, there we didn't have any kind of rights. We are not allowed to work there, and there were a lot of hardship.
An exit plan finally came in 2006. The United States agreed to take in some 60,000 Bhutanese. They started coming in 2008 and will be the third largest group of refugees to arrive this year after the Burmese and Iraqis. Ananta Gurung says his people want to go back to Bhutan, but
absolutely, there is no hope of going back because the government is not taking any initiative to take back the people. And if you stay in refugee camp, then your life is ruined. But if you come to the U.S., then you can at least do something for yourself and for your children.
Coming to the U.S. might be a ray of hope for some, but leaving the camps in Nepal is no end to hard times. When refugees get here, they are scattered across cities throughout the country. They're isolated, stressed, and anxious to find work in a weak economy. Correspondent Adelaide Chen followed their struggles. We start in the refugee camps.
It's before dawn in this refugee camp in Nepal, and this three-year-old boy is not happy to be woken up for the start of a long journey. His family leaves for the U.S. today. The boy's father, Chol Bahadur Tiwari, is inside the bamboo hut that has been his home since his family fled Bhutan almost two decades ago. His father built it. It has a small Hindu altar, a wood-burning stove, and a TV that runs on a car battery.
And what are you leaving behind today?
living like the
world. Important things, anything?
Important, nothing.
It's not unusual for large families to get separated when moving to another country. Tiwari is fortunate that his parents and siblings will all go to Oakland, California. Out of a dozen people, half will leave today. His parents and sister have already left, and three more will stay for now. His brother Gopal is sad to see them go.
How do you feel?
I feel uneasy today. They are going today, and after a few months, I will also go there.
The Tiwaris are traveling today in a group of 100. About 10 times that number leave the camps in Nepal each month. A few head for Denmark or Norway, New Zealand or Australia. Most are bound for the United States. The Tiwaris participate in a ritual before their departure. Elders dab a red paste called a tika on the forehead of each person traveling for protection throughout the journey. Then relatives, neighbors, and friends all leave to meet the buses. Hundreds have gathered at the front entrance of the camp. People are crying, exchanging kisses. The goodbye is bittersweet. This is the first time any of the Tiwaris will get on a plane. They'll fly thousands of miles to a new life in California. They'll leave behind 100,000 refugees, some they may one day see in the U.S. The sound of bus horns and traffic pervade this border town starting at dawn. Demak, Nepal isn't found in any travel guide, and it's not a tourist destination. But it is a hub for humanitarian aid organizations, including the United Nations, which has set up the refugee camps just outside of Demak. These camps are home to 100,000 people without citizenship to Bhutan or Nepal. The camps have been here for almost two decades, but now things are changing. Everyone here has a choice between staying in the camp or moving again to a new life in a third country. At the beginning of the year, only 60% of the refugees had applied to leave the camp. The U.S. has agreed to take 60,000 Bhutanese refugees, less than two-thirds of the population. Rianawati Rianawati is the head of the Demak office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees.
Well, we will have to continue with maintaining our care and maintenance, assisting these refugees while they are staying in the camp. And that will be until the other durable solutions are found for them. Then that could be local integration, that could be repatriation back to Bhutan. Two solutions of which, unfortunately, at the time being, they're not available.
About 1,000 people are already leaving each month. This cultural orientation class is filled with anxious refugees bound for the U.S. In 3 days, the trainers will explain the basics, but also touch on things Americans do that they would consider strange here, like using smoke detectors. One of the participants is Padam Kumar Gimiri. He was 20 when he arrived at the camp. Now he's almost 40. He and his family have been given permission to resettle. He doesn't know the details yet, but he's optimistic.
Really, I was waiting for this opportunity. I was really depressed once, but when I heard that we'd be taken for resettlement in USA, and it is really a joy for me. I don't have any words to express my happiness over this.
Gimiri is educated. He teaches English and social studies, but his wife is illiterate, and he's concerned that she'll have to depend on him in the United States.
She didn't get any opportunity to go to school in Bhutan. She was just 7 or 8 years old. And coming here, she has to look after her small brothers and sisters, and she also didn't get opportunity. So I fear, alone with my earning, whether I would be able to sustain USA or not. That is my greatest problem.
Another worry is being separated from loved ones. The Bhutanese refugees in Nepal have tight family structures. Children who marry grow old in the camps, either in the same hut as their parents or within walking distance. Damanta Harel's grandmother, Januka Upreti, misses her children and grandchildren. They're spread out between California, Idaho, and Virginia. She can't talk to them over the phone because she's hard of hearing. But she sings this Hindu song in hopes that they will hear it on the radio.
Hari bolu hari bolu jhuto maya jani dui din ko jindakani karke laiko pani mero mero banchau chabai mero kehi hoina eklai aayu eklai janchau lane kehi hoina.
The Tiwaris arrive exhausted at the Oakland airport. After a transcontinental trip to New Jersey, they went through much confusion waiting for the connecting flight in Colorado. Tol Bahadur Tiwari is upset that no escort was around during the 8-hour layover when they were uncertain where
now
to go.
Because we wait 8 hours.
Eight hours in Colorado.
That's Don Clement, the regional director of the International Rescue Committee of the San Francisco Bay Area. His office will assist the Tiwaris in the first few months of their arrival.
With this particular number.
My number?
Yes.
That's money?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, people call us from Denver because they get nervous.
Tiwari's wife and 3-year-old, his brother Nirmal, and Nirmal's wife and son, hardly make a sound. It's been 3 days of connecting flights and layovers, and they're low on energy.
Sounds like a hard trip to me. Pretty hard trip. Yeah.
Their stomachs have had a hard time adjusting to their first American food, airplane food.
Bad food.
Peter Newbegin, a staff member from the agency, is comforting Nirmal Tiwari at the baggage claim.
When you get home, you'll have good Nepali food.
Yes.
Yeah. Your parents are cooking now.
Yes.
The International Rescue Committee has found a sizable rental home for the Tiwaris. They're also helping with enrolling Nirmal's son in school, arranging medical checkups, and initial job placement. The 6 of them will move in with the 3 other family members that arrived a few days ago. Some financial support will come from the IRC for 3 months. After that, the family's on their own. On a Sunday afternoon, 2 volunteers with the agency are helping the Tiwaris put up curtains in their new home. Tiwari's 3-year-old son is playing on the bed. In the kitchen, the women are making chai. It's been just 2 weeks since their arrival. Tol Bahadur Tiwari.
I was a refugee in the camp for 17 years. Now I'm in California.
The house has a gas stove, electricity, and running water. Basic necessities in the U.S., but all things they didn't have in the camp. But what Tol Tiwari is most surprised about are the subtle cultural differences.
People like in our locality, when we stay in Bhutan, in Nepal, no? These neighbors, they used to talk, but we don't see any people out here, outside their home. They'll be doing, we don't know what they'll be doing, when they'll be coming, when they'll be going from the home. That is very surprise for me.
It'll take some time to settle into the American way of life. For new refugees, that means taking jobs that are available, which don't necessarily fit their expertise. Damanta Harel has been working on her master's degree at a university in Nepal. But now she's working part-time at a Mexican restaurant. She does the job in good humor.
And sour cream and cheese, please.
That I need to prepare the things like salsa, cut onions, jalapeno, and lettuce for the tacos. So this is my job there. And I'm enjoying this a lot.
When Americans travel abroad, people in other countries know about their culture and customs. When refugees from Bhutan move to the United States, no one knows where they come from.
Some customer used to ask me, are you an Indian? Or some ask me, are you a Mexican? Some people also talk in the Spanish language because they saw me like a Mexican. In the place where I'm working there, we make the Mexican food. And Mexican food is not like our Nepali food. Nowadays, I'm used to eat this. I like it.
So Harel, even with her college degree from Nepal, will have to earn her GED in the United States.
When I were in Nepal, I am so hopeful. But here, when I came here, I need to do GED. That's not bad, actually. But I hope, my hope was not that I need to do GED. Here in America, I find everything crazy, new thing. We need to struggle a lot. We need to learn everything from the basic stage.
And when she decides to enroll in classes to become a certified nursing assistant, she'll have to come up with money that she doesn't have.
Wherever we go in the any corner of the world, we have to struggle to live our life anywhere.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. We now return to Neither Here Nor There, Bhutanese Refugees in the U.S., a documentary produced by Adelaide Chen.
In a recent interview with CNN, the president of the International Rescue Committee, George Rupp, said the largest challenge faced by refugees here is the lack of entry-level jobs in this economy. Those jobs are the path to self-sufficiency. It's tough being a refugee in a struggling job market. Finding jobs on the internet can be difficult. You need to know Craigslist, how to email a resume and cover letter, and of course, meet the education and skill requirements. Someone who's suffering now is Binit Gurung, who arrived in Oakland last summer.
When I was in my country, at the time I used to think that in America they will not discriminate. But when I came here, even I have faced this.
He had gotten a supermarket job through the IRC, but once he quit, he couldn't get anything else. He says he's experienced racial discrimination in the job market. Gurung's sister Susila said she had wanted to quit her job at a child care facility because no one understood what trouble she was having in a new country.
Getting bus, we have to wait for a long time. I'm getting late 2 or 3 times and my boss says, this is America, so you have to come in time. At first, I don't know where to stop bus.
Susila's paycheck is covering the household expenses. When she considered quitting, her mom said no.
When I came home and I cried and I asked my mom, from tomorrow I'll not go that job. So my mom said that, don't do like that, you have to go.
People who work with refugees say the adjustment is tough in the beginning, but it all works out in the end. Anne Strandu is a cultural orientation coordinator with the International Organization for Migration.
What I always found is that refugees want to go to work. They've been sitting, many of them, idle for many years. The idea that they can go out and get a job legally without any fear of being taken advantage of getting in trouble, and being able to support their families after living dependent on aid organizations is a really good feeling for most of them. I have met very few people in 15 years of working with refugees that didn't want to be able to support their families and contribute to the American society.
Social services like TANF are limited to 5 years, says Strandu. If a refugee didn't want to work, they wouldn't have much of a choice.
Well, the goal of the U.S. refugee program is self-sufficiency as soon as possible. So, and refugees, in fact, stay on welfare much shorter period of time than native-born Americans.
But arriving in a new country during an economic downturn makes it difficult for refugees to be financially independent.
We are dealing with an economic downturn. There's no denying that.
Don Clement, the regional director of the International Rescue Committee.
And we're advising everyone to take what really is available to them, not to put any restrictions on themselves, because if they do, they may wind up being unemployed for much longer the time than they're prepared for.
Of all his years of experience, Clement says every refugee makes it. It's just a matter of time. He does acknowledge in these hard times, however, refugees may fall back on welfare.
We are encouraging everyone that can to avoid public assistance system. It is a safety net. It will be there for them if they need it. better for them not to use it. But when they do have to use it, of course, it's complicated, not just for refugees, but for Americans too.
For refugees lucky enough to get jobs, some suffer from underemployment. Deepak Gurung works as a waiter part-time, but it's not enough to cover his monthly rent. He's been at the welfare office more than once this week. His caseworker, he says, is not returning his calls, and the system is too hard to navigate on his own.
Yeah, the systems are very difficult to understand.
And you don't know if you will receive money in time to pay your rent. Are you worried?
If I didn't get any cash from the program, from the CalWORKS, I don't know what to do.
It's nearly impossible for the new Bhutanese arrivals to get the same start he did, says Bert Tapa, who arrived 10 years ago from Bhutan on his own. He says the job situation was the opposite back then.
Those days, the jobs were readily available, so we started just finding jobs and started working. We never, thought of, getting any aid. Mm-hmm. But now, people who migrated just recently, I think they are very hard time.
And can you tell me how long it took you to become financially independent?
A month and a half. Just a month and a half.
Many Oakland-based refugees these days are taking longer to get on their financial 2 feet. But one Sunday, they set aside their worries to attend their first cultural performance in the U.S. They've rented out a large church to seat 200 to 300 Bhutanese, some who've come from Sacramento, an hour away. On stage, kids are dancing in traditional costumes. And there's live music, too. Binod Gurung is playing electric guitar in a band. Ferbet Serling Tamang just arrived this month in Oakland. Had he come a year ago in the spring, only a handful of families would have been here. He's now running into people here that he knew from back home.
I meet oldest friend, so I feel very happy.
These moments where Bhutanese can come together are rare. There's not a Hindu temple that everyone goes to.
We are the landless peoples of Bhutan. We come here now. We don't know what is our future.
Tamang hopes that in a few years, he'll earn his citizenship and have a country he can call his own. He's willing to start over in a new place where he can live in peace. His friend standing next to him agrees.
Yeah, peace. Yeah.
Peace. We want peace, yeah. Always. Yeah. So that we'll have a future.
Right.
For Making Contact, I'm Adelaide Chen.
We just heard from newly arrived Bhutanese in the United States and from the workers who support them. But we wanted to know a little more about just how refugees in general are faring in the beginning of one of the worst recessions of the century. We caught up with Don Clement from the International Rescue Committee in San Francisco, who you just heard from earlier in the show. Don, you've been working with refugees for over 20 years. What difficulties do they face when arriving in this country, both culturally and economically?
When refugees first come into the U.S., of course, they're overwhelmed with everything that they see here, everything that we take for granted, of course, is new for them. And, amongst the hardest things for people to do is to be comfortable enough to start seriously considering how they're going to be self-sufficient, which means find a job and be able to do the job and, transportation is an issue, banking's an issue, everything for refugees is an issue when they first come.
What government aid or services are available to refugees?
When refugees first come into the country, they're entitled to apply for basically 3 public benefits programs. One is a cash assistance program, which will not provide enough, of course, for people to live on, but they have some sort of a stipend for a period of 8 months. They may also apply for the food stamp program, and they may also apply for medical coverage. The majority of refugees are not participating in the cash assistance program, and instead are working closely with IRC so that we can help them find work during their initial period so that they can have the experience quickly of becoming self-sufficient financially and being in a better position than to call their own shots and make their own decisions about what happens to them.
And how long do these programs last?
These are all very time-limited programs. Two of them, it's an 8-month program. And then for a family with dependent children, it might be a little bit longer. People might be enrolled in the TANF program, which I believe has a lifetime eligibility period of 5 years. And people don't want to use that all at once unless in case they run into trouble later down the road.
So can you tell me how the government support for refugees has changed over the years?
Well, the government support for incoming refugees has been, I guess, at one time very generous and maybe not so generous now. Before welfare reform happened in 1996, refugees were going into a system where there was really very few limits on what public assistance is available to people. Now refugees are coming into a program with a completely different set of circumstances where there's a lifetime eligibility for public kind of benefits. And the period that the federal government is willing to pay for as for refugees has shrunk from 3 years down to 8 months over, let's say, the last 15 to 20 years. So it's a much shorter program for refugees now than it was in the past.
Wow. And in this recession, how is that going to affect this government aid?
Well, you know, the effect on government aid is a really gigantic question mark that all of us have. We're all watching what's happening in the state of California very carefully. And, of course, we're alarmed at the things that are coming up, cutting these assistance programs for all kinds of the most vulnerable populations in the state. None of us really understand that, and we're all working hard to see that, those things don't really happen. So it's hard to know. It's not going to be pretty for people if they don't have access to these programs.
And what is the future for the Bhutanese here in the United States? What do you think?
I think the Bhutanese are amongst the clients, the refugee caseloads that we resettled have a very bright future. They're arriving with a high literacy rate, with a lot of ability to speak English. They have high expectations to go to work, to be independent, to experience the freedom that they didn't have before. And so I can see from, a little bit more of a year working with the Bhutanese that, their future is very, very good.
And what will they need for their transition into life in the U.S. to succeed?
Well, I think, in order for them to do the best, they, like all refugees, could use more support, at least to get them through this time of economic uncertainty. This is a real problem for all refugees, including Bhutanese.
Don Clement from the International Rescue Committee in San Francisco, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Donna Potty Harrell, who did translation work for the show, and to Dan Turner, Ron Rucker, and the Monday Morning Breakfast Crew. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. Or you can get our podcast at radioproject.org. Lisa Redman is our executive director, Con Pham associate director, Pauline Bartoloni online editor and producer, Andrew Stelzer producer. Our interns are Megan Martigny, Rita Daniels, and Ozma Moseni. And I'm Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.